Capaccio.
Sal!
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 Capaccio.
On WGR.
Busy man updating 53-man rosters. Join Sal Capaccio as he does the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show live from Northtown Kia, 3900 Sheridan Drive in Amherst, Thursday, September 5th. That's NFL opening day. From 10 to 12, stop by, say hi, grab a Paula's Donut while supplies last, score some awesome WGR 550 swag, and enter to win Bill's merchandise courtesy of Northtown. No purchase necessary. Northtown Automotive, the official automotive dealer of the Buffalo Bills. See you September 5th at Northtown Kia. Good morning, Mr. Capaccio.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, good. You know, it's it's a good day. I said yesterday, it's a good day for people like paperwork and waiver moves and all this. And today could be another day because I saw you tweeting there are more deadlines on the way today.
There are. So today at 12 noon, waivers expire. So anybody claimed, you know, I mean, hey, if you're on the West Coast, it's 9 a.m. when they expire, right? They're operating at a different time out there. But it's 12 noon Eastern time. So waivers expire. The waiver order is the draft order. So if the, I always say, the who had the top pick in the draft? Not the Bears. They did have it, but they weren't the team that actually
the Panthers.
Had it.
Yeah.
Thank you. The Panthers. I want to make sure that's right. The Panthers. So the Panthers have the first pick in the waiver order. It does not reset. If the Panthers want five guys, they get five guys. You know what I mean? Like, okay, these are the five guys. It does not. They get everybody they choose, and it goes to the next team, whatever. So it doesn't reset. At 12 noon, all teams are notified of all the waiver claims. Obviously, if you claim a player off waivers, you have to make a corresponding roster move. Somebody has to be waived or released. As soon as that's done, you can then begin signing your 16-man practice squad. This is actually very interesting for the Bills because the Bills get a 17-man practice squad because they have an International Pathways Program player who's exempt. That is Travis Clayton. However, they put Travis Clayton on injured reserve yesterday. Literally, guys, a minute before I came on with you, I learned something interesting, which is the Bills still get a 17th-man exemption if they sign another Pathways Program player. They are a team that is allowed to do that. How about that?
Okay.
Doesn't have to be Travis Clayton. So I'll throw that out there in a little while. I just learned that, like, literally a minute before I went on because I didn't know that. It's great. So anyway, by 4 p.m. today, now but at 4 p.m., once 4 p.m. hits today, that's when the first day of actual transactions begins for the regular season. At that time, the Bills can put someone on injured reserve, allowing them to come back later in the year. If you were put on injured reserve yesterday, you weren't allowed unless you had the designated to return list, which is obviously Matt Milano and Darrington Evans. You don't have to designate it to return today, though. So let's just say, for example, the Bills put Quentin Morris on IR today at 4 p.m. They don't have to say designated return. He automatically is. Anybody who's put on is just designated return. That's just the way. But then you don't have to choose him to be until he's ready to return, if that makes sense. And because you only get eight of those. That's why that's important. You only get eight of those. They've already eaten up two of them because they declared it yesterday by the rules with Milano and Darrington Evans. Starting today, you don't have to declare the people right away, but through the year, you'll only get six more for the Buffalo Bills. And then finally, we have Bills stuff today. 2:30, Brandon Bean speaks. And 3 p.m., the team has practice.
And it's not quite game week, but it might as well be, right? Now they can – it's a little bye week leading into Arizona. It is focus on the Cardinals and getting a win in week one. So we'll start to get into our regular kind of routine. Sal, with the 53, there were small surprises, right? Are you looking at small surprises? We talked, I think – Shavers was early enough to be something we talked about. Daquan Hardy might even be a bigger surprise because of what he was able to do in the return game, how he thought he'd won that job. And, of course, they make a trade with the Jets for Brandon Codrington to be, it would seem, that return guy. So surprises from yesterday and takeaways from those specific moves.
Yeah, my surprise was early in the morning, Tyrell Shavers. I had Tyrell Shavers making it. Maybe we didn't really talk enough about them keeping five receivers, but they did last year, as Joe pointed out, and others have. Now, they did keep five last year. It always felt to me, though, that Tyrell Shavers was making this team based on the way that they handled him, the reps he was getting, where he was playing, when he was playing. It wasn't like Tyrell Shavers was wowing camp. that wasn't the case. He didn't have a bad camp either. He was just solid. He was solid and steady, and he was always there. He was always a guy up in that, you know, top rotation. But they feel that they want to keep five. So to me, that probably meant he was the sixth guy. And then maybe you hope you can get him back in the practice squad, and then you can you use him throughout the year. That was number one surprise for me. It was not a surprise Joe Andreessen made it. I had Joe Andreessen making the 53-man roster. Good for him. You know, he earned a spot. I just didn't know what they would do with Bale and Spector. Now we know Bale and Spector made the club. Does Bale and Spector go on injured reserve today, though? We don't know. I mean, that could be someone to watch for today. A bunch of other guys as well. What else? But I think the big surprise for me was Daquan Hardy. I mean, like a lot of people. They trade for Brandon Codrington, and he is a return man. This... I saw yesterday a lot of people were talking about how, I don't know if Joe brought this up with you, I didn't hear that particular few minutes with him, but Daquan Hardy went to the x-ray room after the Saturday game. So there may have been injury there. However, guys, you can't release an injured player, and he didn't go on injured reserve. So this has to be a football decision. This is not an injury decision. If it was an injury decision, we would have had that transaction in some capacity. Because you can't cut an injured player, like I said. So they must have just decided we want something different, and they didn't. They moved on from Hardy in one capacity. I mean, maybe he comes back in the practice squad. I think he'd be a really good practice squad candidate. But man, somebody could also scoop him up. We've seen that happen, and I thought he put together, you know, a decent camp and preseason. He showed he could play on the boundary, so you never know if you're getting him back. But the surprise to me was A, Daquan Hardy being released, but B, that this is really, it comes down to, it's got to be, to me, a football decision based on the fact that they didn't put him on IR and you can't cut an injured player. So they just basically decided we want somebody else. I just think the Bills, they still are wondering, you know, if Daquan can handle returning punts in that stadium as the weather starts to turn and it gets windy. I mean, there was some decision making. Yes, he made a good decision in the last, you know, week of preseason to let a ball go, but he didn't have any return opportunities either, if I remember correctly. So now you get a guy like Brandon Codrington, and obviously the Bills would have some sort of book on him, right? They would have scouted him. They would have liked him. He goes to the Jets. He has a really good preseason, and that's the guy that they wind up bringing in. So, yeah, those were the surprises for me. I guess Casey Tuhill, I don't know. I mean, a bit of a surprise, I guess. I always felt, just knowing that the team was high on him and felt that, you know, he kind of had a bit of a lost preseason camp because of the injury. I think the team is going on faith of what they signed him for, what they believe in him. And to me, though, the unfortunate part is Kingsley Jonathan gets waived. I think Kingsley, you know, looked really good. And it just, this was an area, Joe, you and I, we talked about it last week. Mm-hmm. I talked about this with Matt Bove, a lot of the podcast guys. This is probably their deepest group. So it was going to be tough to make a decision there.
Do you think, Sal, that this is further confirmation that the health of Curtis Samuel and Marquez Valdes-Scantling are getting closer to they're going to be able to play, if not even, you know, assume at this point they'd be able to play week one just because there isn't this deep room? Or do you think, you know, maybe that's presumptuous because they could, of course, re-sign a few of these receivers to the practice squad and then you get your elevations?
Yeah, I think at least they're trending right based on what Sean McDermott said, Joe, but probably, you know, a good sign they only kept five. But again, as you pointed out, you don't have a lot of work to do if you need to grab another guy. You can bring a couple guys back. You can bring back Deion Kane. You can bring back Tyrell Shavers. You know, there's certain rules in the practice squad and how many years and things, but you get this group of guys and you say, okay, and maybe they have even add an extra receiver than they normally would because they want to have some insurance. So there's some gymnastics. It's the same thing with quarterback. That was an interesting spot for me. And I had been saying for about a week, look, the Bills generally would like a guy as the third quarterback who knows their system. Because if he has to get up to speed next week, it's not about being available to play against the Cardinals. It's about practicing next week to prepare for the Cardinals too. Like if Mitch Trubisky is not able to practice next week, I mean, you have no number two quarterback. Well, now they have Mike White. So my thought was DiNucci would fit there because he knows the system. He's been here. But Mike White's been around. He's a veteran. He can pick up a system. I'm sure they're very confident in that. So it looks to me, my guess would be, and I don't know this, we'll see how it goes. My guess would be Trubisky, you know, he stays on the active roster, and then Mike White gets elevated week one and maybe even week two. Or Trubisky might go on IR today, for all we know, right? And then you can bring Mike White up on the actual team. Maybe that's why he decided. You know, read between the lines, right? Now I'm actually working through this as I'm talking with you guys. We heard pretty quickly that Mike White sign into the practice squad, right?
Yeah, it was he's visiting, he signed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking, okay, Mike White, like, he's got to have other teams maybe interested. He's been around the league. He's done a decent job when he's filled in. Why would he choose so quickly to come to Buffalo? And again, me just knowing the way the league works, I'm thinking, is he told, hey, you sign on the practice squad. Once one day goes by, we put Trubisky in IR, and then we're actually signing you to the active roster because then Trubisky can come back later. Because as Joe pointed out, you only get three elevations. So this would take care of that. You wouldn't have to elevate him. He'd actually be on the roster.
Right. Yeah, is he also – he's kind of interesting for, like, what level of quarterback he is, Sal, for the backup. Because an Anthony Brown, a Ben DiNucci, you know, there are certain backups where you sign him and go, like, all right, this probably makes more sense. Even Buchel last year when he signed, you know, more of, like, a guy that makes sense to be a number three. White, just because he's had a couple of big games when he had to fill in for the Jets. It wasn't all the time. I mean, the Bills got the better of him when he played against them 2 years ago. But I wonder about him and the potential for him being the number two. Maybe not even just, you know, quality-wise, oh, is he better than Trubisky? And maybe just what it says about Trubisky's injury, that they signed a guy that I don't think anybody would sneeze at him being like a number two quarterback in the NFL.
No, I agree with you. I've always admired Mike White. I mean, we know that, you know, what happened when he came to Buffalo a couple of years ago with
that was a bad
Matt Milano yeah, hitting him, right? I mean, man, the guy, he's taken some shots. Not in the greatest, you know, situation necessarily where he's been, but I've always admired him. He's been in the league a few years now. He has over a 60, I'm looking over a 62% completion percentage. He's thrown a bunch of interceptions.
A lot of
nine
points.
Touchdowns, yeah. 13 interceptions. So he's a guy that slings it a little bit. You know, and I just 6'5", 216. You know, I like the fact that, you know, he's kind of a guy that's out there, is a little bit fearless, you know.
That's a very different style. I guess it can depend what you like, right? Like, the Bills have kind of gone maybe back and forth. Trubisky kind of protects the ball a little bit more, maybe, versus what Matt Barkley used to be and maybe what Mike White is here. Like, White, kind of like, it reminds me of Barkley's stat line when the Bills signed him, Sal, which was, hey, there are some games in here with, like, four picks, holy cow. But then, oh, look, a 400-yard game with three touchdowns and two other 300-yard games. Like, you can have your backups where you go, all right, just don't lose us the game. And then, I don't know, you got a couple backups mixed in here where, like, they might win it for you. They might also lose it for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. It really is interesting, right, about, you know, how they want to approach it. Think about the backups they've had here in Buffalo, including Mitch Trubisky. Mitch is, you know, I mean, Mitch is a gunslinger. He's an athletic guy. You know, he can make some plays out in space. I know things haven't gone as well this year, but, you know, Case Keenum, Kyle Allen, there's all different kind of guys, right, that they've had here in Buffalo backing up. Kyle Allen was a little bit more of that. Case Keenum less. Right. So I think, I mean, I guess you could count him like that. Not as much of an arm, right? Matt Barkley, not the strongest arm dude in the world, right? But a guy that he was not afraid to put the ball in harm's way. So very interesting. Yeah. It's a really interesting spot. But now I'm thinking about it, and I'm sitting here, guys, because I was assuming, and yesterday I wrote this, I tweeted this yesterday, which is, I would assume that Trubisky would be the quarterback and then you elevate White. But now I'm thinking, well, maybe you just IR White today and then, I'm sorry, IR Trubisky, and then White just, it becomes your number two on the roster for 4 weeks, and then you can decide what to do after that time.
Sal Capaccio on the Whistler Hotline. So one thing I'm thinking about, another, I guess, thing to track, this is not exactly 53 stuff, but it's roster stuff. What's the timeline for captains being announced?
We usually get that week one, I think. I don't think it's yet this week. I don't think it's today. It's interesting. I don't know. I'll have to go back. I think usually week one we wind up getting that, like the week of week one to start practice. Like that would be like Tuesday, Wednesday next week, basically. Yeah.
Do you have any ideas? Like any? How many different spots do they have to fill? Is it six new captains? I mean, Allen returns. And who else?
That's something, though, Sal, right? They can decide for themselves, like, how many. Am I right on that?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know if there's a rule on how many you have to have, like a minimum or anything like that. Looking back, let me see if I have Bills captains. Let's say 1 year in 2017, I have this. This is McDermott's first year. Kyle Williams, Tyrod Taylor, Lorenzo Alexander, Eric Wood, Steven Hauschka, five of them.
Okay.
Steven Hauschka was a captain. There you go. 2022, the Bills had three on offense, four on defense, two special teams. So they had They had 9 that year.
Okay. Are you looking around the roster, Sal? Is there any position that jumped out to you for how many they kept? I know we kind of went through like surprises and maybe guys we weren't surprised made it or didn't make it. Was there any position where you went or you were surprised at how many or how few they kept?
Well, I guess, you know, wide receiver at 5, but like I said, we should probably have thought about that a little bit more than we did or talked about it because they have done that. I'm not surprised at the edge slash tackle because it's 6 and 4. And what I keep telling people, it's really 5.5, 4.5. The number that matters is 10 with defensive line because Smoot is kind of both, right? He's a defensive end by trade, but he can play defensive tackle. And the Bills have used him there. So not surprised there. I would say linebacker, they're a little thick. And Jeremy, I heard you talking earlier. Maybe someone else did. I tweeted about San Francisco keeping 6 linebackers.
Yeah, and how that
and
might
the reason
be.
I did it.
Yeah.
And the reason I did is because someone actually tweeted at me and said, I can't believe the Bills kept 6 linebackers. It's because they have a defensive coach. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Kyle Shanahan and the Niners kept 6 linebackers.
Gotcha.
That's not why they kept them.
Right.
The reason you kept 6 linebackers is maybe because, A, you might have an injury to Bale Inspector. Nicholas Morrow's been a little bit injured. Like, you want to have a little insurance there. And, B, maybe the special teams rules tell you you should keep 6 linebackers. Every team's going to formulate this differently. So that was an area where I thought it was interesting. And then what do you do with Brandon Codrington? He's not really a corner. I put him on my list as a corner. I mean, he is a corner, I should say. But he's really here to be a return man, right? So they only have 4 boundary corners, Douglas, Benford, Elam, and Ingram. And that's fine. You don't need necessarily more than that. But I thought that, you know, just looking at that group right there, you know, that's their 4. That's where they're rolling.
Is there anyone that jumps to mind? Maybe we've already talked about him. Even, you know, Daquan Hardy could be the answer to this. Somebody that they let go that you might be thinking, okay, that I could see that guy getting claimed or poached by another team if they're trying to get him to a practice squad.
I wonder about Frank Gore Jr. You know, I mean, he put together a really nice film on Saturday. His vision was really good. I just keep coming back to, do teams have a running back that they feel Frank Gore Jr. can replace on their own active roster? Remember, anybody claimed today goes immediately to your 53 and has to stay there for 4 weeks, I believe it is. You got to pay him at least. And I think they have to stay on the roster then. But, you know, so it's not that easy. The Panthers did it, though, with Raheem Blackshear a couple years ago, right? I mean, he's still on their team. So if anybody thinks that Frank Gore Jr. can actually be better than the guy on their active roster right now, I think that would be a guy. I don't really trying to think of anybody else. Zach Davidson, did he do enough to show that he can catch the ball and be athletic? I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of known. I'm sure most teams would, you know, know that you're getting a tight end that's really more just of an athletic, you know, pass catcher. He's not really going to help you in the run game or blocking that much. So that's not a guy I necessarily would think would get claimed. That would be it. Okay. And then I guess Daquan, of course. Daquan's, he's a draft pick. Daquan Hardy is the only Bills draft pick that didn't make the team in some capacity. Travis Clayton was put on IR. But Daquan Hardy, so the Bills had 9 of 10 players make the team, draft picks make the team in some capacity.
Yeah, that included a couple of the linemen that they drafted late that made it.
Yeah.
I saw that. I don't know how interesting this is as a takeaway, Sal, but looking at their backup linemen, I think I saw 40 career snaps between the 4 of them. Like they've been in the room though, right? So even while they might be inexperienced on the field, it's 2 rookies and then 2 guys that they've had around.
I've said this, as you guys know, for a while. I think the Bills have one of the deepest offensive line groups in the NFL. Now, you might not have a top 5 unit starting 5. They're good. They're not, you know, oh my God, the Buffalo Bills offensive line is amazing. They're good. They're solid. What they've done is, though, they've built a really deep group that can fill in go in and play. And if they have injuries, like, you're going to be okay for a game or two at whatever spots. Now, it's a little concerning to me, guys. They only kept 1 true backup guard. That is Alec Anderson. Tylon Grable's a tackle. Cedric Van Paren Granger is a center. Ryan Vandermark is a tackle. So you only have 1 actual backup guard. Now, in a pinch, if you had to, you know, Connor McGovern can play guard. You can move Alec Anderson to center. And that's part of the reason that, you know, he's played there a lot. So if something were to happen, you can have some flexibility, even with the guys, you know, who are starting there. But you think about this group. Alec Anderson, Ryan Vandermark are just the poster children for development under the Buffalo Bills offensive line. It's the 3rd year they've been here. And these guys remember, Joe, I was telling you 2 years ago how much they love these guys. Like these, they love these guys, and they're gonna develop them. And here they are. They're the sixth, you know, and seventh guys, however you want to respectively say. They're the swing tackle and the swing interior guy. And I think they're both to a level now where, you know, by next year they could be starting because other guys move on because of contracts or whatever other reason. And then obviously Cedric Van Pran Granger's a guy that we didn't see a ton of in the preseason, but he played at such a high level. He's a mid-round draft pick. You know, he wasn't going to go anywhere. They really like him. Tylon Grable's the interesting one. Tylon Grable has really surprised. For him to come in from UCF to play tackle, to supplant and allow them to move on from Lyle Collins, that was the last one on my like 53. When I did the projection, he was the guy I couldn't figure out if I wanted in or out. I had him off because I didn't know if there was a spot for him, and eventually there wasn't. Tylon Grable surprised. I think that's a really, really interesting key guy, too, to think about here going forward.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. Thank you, Sal. We'll be listening, again, more deadlines today, and we hear from the GM and the coach both today.
I don't know about the coach.
Oh, sorry.
I know
just the GM. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check. It's possible, but I know we are scheduled for Brandon Bean at 2:30 and practice at 3.
Okay, very good. Practice at 3 o'clock today. Thanks, Sal.
Okay, you got it.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline as we break down the final 53. Not so final 53. Is Josh Allen the most overrated quarterback in the NFL? On ESPN right now.
Brutal. That's not that brutal.
It's fine. The ESPN, yeah. They polled 100 players. Can I tell you about a funny response I got to this, which is, I think this is maybe perfectly put, and a number of people arrived at this. So, Allen was named by 100 random players as the most overrated quarterback, but also the fourth best quarterback,
mm-hmm.
and also the league's biggest trash talker at quarterback.
Yeah. We've talked about this, that all these lists, polls, surveys, whatever, when Allen comes out as, hey, someone said he's overrated. Oh, get him. And it's almost always has to do with turnovers.
Turnovers.
I had a thought on this yesterday. All these people around the league that care about turnovers, how much does the Bills coach actually care about turnovers?
He cares.
He says he cares.
He cares.
What do his actions say? Other than there's one.
You know what? Get to me when I see neutral run pass rate in about a month.
Sure.
But hold on.
But before James Cook is like the one example of, oh, man, look at that. He fumbled, and then he was in the doghouse. The Bills have had, in the McDermott era, the quarterback that by volume turns the ball over the most in Josh Allen. They've had the running back in Devin Singletary that turns the ball over the most. Four different occasions, he started the most interception-prone quarterback in National Football League history in Nathan Peterman. And defensively, how do they play? They don't play to go get turnovers, right? It's keep everything in front of you. They don't hunt the turnovers on defense. It's how they play defense. So I'm not saying they don't care about it at all, but does he care about it as much as some other people do? Because I feel like I've got some evidence that they're okay with it if they're going to get the results at other things.
Well, I've got to get you this thought though. The rest of it. That's a point well made. What are the chances that the reason Josh Allen is named the most overrated quarterback by players is not turnovers and it's trash talk? What do you say to someone that talks too much trash? That guy thinks he's way better than he is.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Because a
good.
Few people pointed out when seeing that this ESPN player list was, he's the fourth best, but he's overrated, and he's also the biggest trash talker. Translation, Josh hurts people's feelings, and they're being petty. That's not that crazy. The biggest trash talker is the most likely to be hated on by someone else.
So you're thinking the people that voted him as the biggest trash talker are also voting him as the most overrated.
They asked 100 players the same questions.
Right.
I'm just saying, right. If there's anybody in the league, let's look at Bills fans' history. Can anybody think of a defensive back you hate a little bit more than others? Jalen Ramsey. Why? Because he called
Josh
trash.
Allen trash. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
He talked trash. If you talk trash at all.
Yeah.
You invite. This guy thinks he's way better than he is. I'd like to shut him up. He's overrated.
Yeah. Sherman and Crabtree come to mind for
absolutely.
This. Yeah.
So, small little theory there that maybe the trash talk is part of why a player might say, bleep that guy. He's good, but bleep that guy. The other trash talkers were Rodgers as number two.
Really?
Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
Okay.
The story in the ESPN piece said that it's an intellectual trash talk.
Oh my
God. Like he stares you down and he knows where you are and he gets in your head. Oh, that was kind of a funny comment. Anyway, all right, when we get back, Tim Kirkjian brought up a grizzly bear and we're going to get stupid.